I'll be the therapy that you need, baby, right here at home. Get lost in my body and pretend that nothing is wrong.
Quasi-cerebral talk and tunes. Broadcasting from unceded Coast Salish territories, this is Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. Here's your next hour of commentary and music.
But we just need one night off to apply that good pressure.
I'm going to destroy your pornographic library. My name is Leslie.
One day I endeavor to be as smug and wrong as all the British people in the new Ace Attorney game. I'm Jade.
That is high aspirations, because as we know, there is...
They are very smug and very, very wrong.
Very wrong. Are you enjoying your playthrough of the new Ace Attorney game, which we have been alluding to for the past maybe year?
I am really enjoying my playthrough. It's quite something. The gameplay is really good. The cases are really long, which is a point of contention for some fans, but I do really enjoy longer cases. The writing is really good. I think the translation team did a really fabulous job with the translations without making it like too intense, but it's still like quite intense and very period appropriate. You just like face a microaggression like every 5 minutes in the game. It's fun.
Love that.
Love England.
Love that. In the year of Stop Asian Hate or whatever.
Capcom really did that. They really made a choice to release this game this year.
Today is a special program, somewhat, I suppose. Though every show, I guess, is special.
In its own way.
Yesterday was Vancouver Pride. Happy Pride to all those who celebrate. And here at Typically Tuesdays, we hope that you stayed cool, but were able to warm your hearts and that you got to spend it with people who you loved. And also that you will have many, many more. It's starting to sound like a birthday congratulatory message. But yeah, that's it. Happy Pride.
Many more prides to come.
Many more prides to come. And therefore, today, it is time for us to finally read your love letters on air to celebrate Vancouver Pride. This is a project that we decided to embark on in late June, and we are very grateful for those who've been tuning into the show, and also to the people who have been interested in this broadcast. And today we will read your love letters, or love letter. as you will learn the distinction later on today. So let's get right into the program. We embarked on a journey to endeavor to read your love letters that you would send to your queer loved ones on this very broadcast on this day. This particular project was an effort to recenter queer people when it comes to Pride, because for a lot of reasons. Should I go into them? Is it going to take too long if we have like a sociopolitical discussion about who matters at Pride? But
this Pride, we're centering queer people and not absolute vodka.
Oh God. Anyways, thank God we don't have a sponsorship. I'd like to talk a little bit about what inspired this project. So last year, I did a research project about Vancouver and queer history, and I stumbled upon archives of a community radio program that was on Co-op Radio since the 80s into, I believe, the 2000s, called The Lesbian Show. And the episodes of the show were archived on the Archive of Lesbian Oral Testimony website. And they were from 1989 to 1991. The first episode that I listened to was the Valentine's Day show, in which the hosts shared notes, letters, and other things that they received from folks in the community for the episode's Dial a Dyke segment. And that kind of spurred my idea for this project to create a love letters type segment featuring love for queer folks. But I wanted to expand the idea of what the lesbian show did to bring in submissions for all sorts of folks expressing all sorts of love forms for their queer loved ones. And thus this project and episode were born with much effort from us and also from the lovely executive staff members at CJSF who helped us promote this project. We received a grand total of one letter, which was really great. And it's a very sweet letter. And we're going to read that now. So this is from somebody named Petal. And their letter writes, "Hey, thanks for letting me see your full self. It is beautiful. Queer is beautiful. I'm glad we can hold each other tight and have sweet days together. You will always be welcome with me and in my space. Love you." And they're writing from Vancouver. So thank you very much, Petal, for your submission. I hope your queer loved one is listening to this and feeling all those warm, fuzzy feelings from receiving that. And yeah, happy Pride to you both.
Well, I guess that begs the question. I'm going to become a full boomer now. But why don't kids these days write letters anymore? Because I feel like that was kind of one of the roadblocks that we face in this project, is that people just straight up don't, you know, write love letters to people.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. Something that I kind of encountered while I was doing research for this episode was the difficulty in reading a love letter. It's partly, I think, a roadblock with my reading comprehension, or my ability to read people's handwriting, because it's very difficult. On the other hand, I felt also when I read some of the love letters that we're going to be reading later on today, I was really blown away by how intense emotionally they are and erotic they are. And not even in the sense of sexy, it's in the sense of the classic Grecian eroticism of, oh my God, my love causes me pain and I will die.
It's very, it's very, very capital R romantic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're really, love letters are pretty, I mean, I feel like I'm just pointing out the obvious, but they're hard to write. They're very difficult. It's not just filling out a form, checking boxes. It's like you said, I really think it's an act of devotion to be able to express your feelings and lay them all out for someone else to read. It's it's a very vulnerable thing. And a very beautiful one, but
Yeah. I was gonna ask, do you ever notice yourself to your friends and loved ones and whatnot? Do you notice that you are often expressing affection and love in other ways and kind of that communicative form? A communicative form? What? And let's say text messages or phone calls and things like that, right?
Do I tell my friends that I love them?
Yes, I guess.
No, I don't. I definitely don't. Okay. I guess that's not, it's really not my love language, just the thing. I'm definitely more of a giving person. I'll give somebody a thing, and that's my way of showing my love and devotion towards another person. I wouldn't say that I'm really bad with words, but I don't think I'm a very sentimental person. What about you?
I say I love you to my friends a lot, I think. And I tell them to, like, you know, take care of themselves and stuff. And but I think that my emotional boundaries have like a complete hard stop when it comes to anything other than that. Saying I love you is easier than saying something like, you know, I'm so glad that we got to spend time with each other because X, Y, Z, and you make me really happy. Even if it doesn't feel as vulnerable when I say that, but if I have to do it like to a person, and that feels very like, oh, we've gotten too intimate here.
Yeah. I think I know how you feel. I think for me, I just find it really difficult to put that down on paper. Because, you know, when it's on paper, it's there forever. Even though it's not, you can like just get rid of it. But it feels like very concrete once you put it on something. Mm-hmm. I even really have a hard time keeping diaries because I'm scared to like look back on what I thought of like 2 years ago and think, oh my God, I was so dumb.
Yeah, I feel that. Would you want to receive love letters from somebody who like you're courting?
courting. One of my eligible suitors.
Yeah.
I think it would be really sweet. Again, I guess I won't write them, but I'll read them if you're giving them to me. Yeah, I think it's really sweet. I really applaud people who can like really like lay their feelings out there like that, because I have way too many walls put up for exposing my vulnerabilities. What's that one quote that everyone on Tumblr was really into for a while? Huh? If you want to experience like being loved, you have to like give yourself into like the mortifying idea of being known or something like that.
I don't know.
So it's a quote from, I believe it's from a New Yorker article. And I just looked this up and I Googled the quote, and for some reason there's a Know Your Memes page on this. So I guess it's become a meme now. But the quote reads, if we want the rewards of being loved, we have to submit to the mortifying ordeal of being known. So if you want to achieve that deep relationship or that deep affection with somebody else, you have to like bear like the complexities and vulnerabilities and contradictions within yourself, which I think is really what a love letter is. If you want to be loved, you have to, you know, you have to be known first. Maybe I'm just not ready to be known.
I shall simply not be perceived by anyone.
Yeah, exactly. It is exactly like a mortifying ordeal, bearing yourself out like that. So, I mean, again, I really applaud the one person that submitted a love letter, because I don't know if I will, like, have it in me to do that even.
Thank you, Petal. And we greatly appreciate you. And so now let's hop into the section, the moment, the... Wait, what is that? She is a legend. She is an icon. She is the moment. Let's hop into the legend icon moment of right now. And we're going to be talking about queer love letters in history. So, with the internet, and now with more people becoming more tolerant, I guess, of queer folks and queer cultures and things like that, I want to know, what are the love letters in history that you have found that have stood out to you that you want to share today?
So, like, the first love letter that comes to mind when you say that, like, that immediately comes to mind are the correspondences between the English writer Virginia Woolf and her friend and passionate lover, Vita Sackville West. Vita Sackville West, which even her... Vita's I think her Vita's son described their relationship as the longest and most charming one in literature. This is an excerpt from one of the letters that Virginia sent to Vita that really resonated with me when I read it. It's probably like one of the first queer love letters that I've ever read from historical figures. And I just want to say that I've been playing Ace Attorney a lot, and it's set in England, and every time, and I've been like reciting out all the lines in Ace Attorney in an English accent, but I'm not gonna attempt one here, because everybody like in Ace Attorney is either like they have like either like a Cockney accent where they're like from Ireland, and I don't think Virginia Woolf is either Cockney or from Ireland. I'm just gonna say it in my normal voice. Look here, Vita. Throw away your man and we'll go to Hampton Court and dine on the river together and walk in the garden in the moonlight and come home late and have a bottle of wine and get tipsy. I'll tell you all the things I have in my head. Millions, myriads, they won't stir by day, only by dark on the river. Think of that. Throw away your man, I say, and come. And of course, I have to read Vita's reply to this, which is also like just like astoundingly beautiful. And incredibly passionate. I am reduced to a thing that wants Virginia. I composed a beautiful letter to you in the sleepless nightmare hours of the night, but it has all gone. I just miss you in a quite simple, desperate human way. You, with all your undumb letters, would never write so elementary a phrase as that. Perhaps you wouldn't even feel it. Yet I believe you'll be sensible of a little gap. But you clothe it so exquisite, a phrase that should lose a little of its reality, whereas with me, it is quite stark. I miss you even more than I could have believed, and I was prepared to miss you a good deal. So this letter is really just a squeal of pain. It is incredible how essential to me you have become. I suppose you are accustomed to people saying these things. Damn you, spoiled creature. I shan't make you love me anymore by giving myself away like this, but oh my dear, I can't be clever and standoffish with you. I love you too much for that, too truly. You have no idea of how standoffish I can be with people I don't love. I have brought it to a fine art, but you have broken down my defenses, and I don't really resent it.
That's really intense.
Yeah, super intense. Did Victorians just like feel intense all the time because they were like repressed sexually?
I would assume so.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to let that out somehow. Maybe that's also why like these days people just aren't writing a lot of love letters, because like, you know, it's easy to hook up.
You're not impressed enough. We need more repression.
Yeah, that's right.
Of more beautiful art. I mean, I think that's kind of like, I mean, for me is that I think one of the reasons why people aren't writing love letters anymore is that, I mean, we're just like communicating on a daily basis with each other in like a ton of different ways, and like to an extent that like people from 100 years ago wouldn't be able to imagine. You know, like if you had a sweetheart that's living in like another city or in another country in the Victorian ages, you'll probably have to like save up to write each other letters every day, or like once every week or once a month if they're living really far. The letters are also going to be traveling really far, so you don't get to hear from them that often, but now you can just like have a FaceTime call. There's no reason to like bottle up your passions anymore. You can just like express them as freely as you want all the time.
Yeah, that's fair. And I mean, imagine how intense, like how even more intense it would be if like you were dating somebody and they would like send you these like incredibly passionate text messages, like
oh my God,
10 a day. Like, oh my God.
I feel like if that were to happen, that would like end up on one of those like Instagram accounts, like beam me up, soft boy. Like people will like not enjoy it. Which again, begs the question, do people even like love letters anymore? Is that a thing that people actually enjoy receiving, or would they think that it's just like too corny?
I wonder. I do write to my friend pretty often, and she writes letters and postcards everywhere, but I don't do that with anybody else because nobody else does it. So I think maybe.
How would you react if you got a DM on Instagram being like, throw away your man, let's go to the Hamptons?
I'd be like, where are the Hamptons? Let's read more, I guess. Let's talk about more. Let's just throw ourselves into a pit of let's throw ourselves into a pit of vicarious yearning.
I have another love letter that's it's from the poet Arthur Rimbaud to his good friend Paul Verlaine, which I found is like, I call this like the male version of the throw away your man letter, because apparently Verlaine was more in love with Rimbaud than Rimbaud was with him, but Verlaine was the one that married. And this is Rimbaud writing to Verlaine. Come back, dear friend, only friend. Come back, I swear I shall be kind. If I was sullen with you, it was a joke which I persisted to carry on. I repent of it more than I can say. Come back, it will be quite forgotten. What a pity that you should have believed that joke. For 2 days, I have not stopped crying. Mood. Come back, be brave, dear friend. Nothing is lost. You just have to do the journey again. We will live here again, very bravely, patiently. Oh, I implore you. It's for your own good, besides. Come back. You will find all your things here. I hope you realize now that there was nothing real in our argument, not that awful moment. But you, when I made a sign to you to get off the boat, why didn't you come? We lived together for 2 years to come to that hour. What are you going to do? If you don't want to come back here, would you like me to join you where you are? Yes, it's me who was wrong. Oh, you will not forget. You will not forget me, will you? No, you can't forget me. Me, I always will have you here. Tell me, answer your friend. We must not live together anymore. Be brave. Answer me quickly. I can't stay here much longer. Just listen to your good heart. Quick, tell me if I must come to you. Yours for the whole life, Rimbaud.
The whole
answer
life.
Quickly. Yeah. Which, funny to say, because he only lived till 37.
Oh, no.
Answer quickly. I can't stay here longer than Monday evening. I do not have a penny yet. I can't post this. Mood. I have given Vermersch your books and manuscripts to look after. If I must not see you again, I am going to enlist in the Navy or the Army. I love that. Oh, come back. Every hour is I'm crying again. Tell me to meet you. I will come. Tell it to me. Send me a telegram. I must leave on Monday evening. Where are you going? What are you going to do? Yep.
Yep. I just realized we're supposed to have this kind of tender episode. You know, we're sharing these very romantic and passionate writings between lovers at times where in which it was not safe to be out with a same-sex, same-gender partner, and yet we're making fun of these people. You're crying all day. Same.
I mean, I agree, but it's also funny. It's both. It's tender and it's funny.
Very bad. Okay, so something I want to ask is, were these letters ever published into a book? Because Virginia Woolf and Vita Sackville-West's letters were published into a book.
Were published in a book.
Yeah.
I know that Rimbaud's letters were also published in a book. It wasn't just his letters to Paul Verlaine, but his letters to, I guess, all his friends. The book of Arthur Rimbaud's letters is called I Promise to Be Good, which is a nice title. I really enjoyed that title.
Yeah.
If feel like it really reflects his youthfulness very well. Did you have any letters you wanted to share?
I do have letters. They're a little bit more modern, I guess. So they're from an Instagram account called My Two Gay Uncles. And it's run by somebody who is documenting the lives of their uncles, Jerry, who was a priest, and Barry, who was an artist, Jerry and Barry. The two met in 1973 in San Francisco, and they were in a very, very long relationship together. They were not always monogamous, and they did not always live together, but they were always thinking about each other. So I have a few here. They're all fairly short, and I'm going to read them in sort of like a linear order. So here's a letter from Jerry to Barry after the first day they met. Dear Barry, I fear that everything I say about my experience with you yesterday might sound trite, only because my superlatives tend to get that way. My heart, however, is filled with poetry, and this is something I hope you felt yesterday and shall feel when we are near again. I've been very jubilant today, so happy to be alive, so happy to have tasted a bit of tenderness, love, and warmth that is yours. I'm still delirious over the special magic that happened between us. I want to be with you again soon. Please call me. With affection and care, Jerry. Remember when people said, please call me?
Oh my God.
What a time.
When's the last time you called somebody?
We're having a call right now.
Oh, that's true. But it's a Zoom call. When's the last time you like picked up the phone and dialed in a number? I think the last time I did that was to call my bank, which was the opposite of romantic. I had to get my credit card cleared.
I think the last time I did that was on a phone call with my counselor, which is just as emotionally invested and taxing as a love letter might be, but come from a completely different place.
Yeah.
So here is a letter that Jerry wrote on their anniversary. Barry, I have just finished reading all of your love notes of 1 year ago. It was exciting to relive those exciting days of falling in love with each other. I'm still falling more and more in love with you with each passing day. You turned out to be that one in a million person for me. Now I have you to love and enjoy and be happy with forever. You did sign a yours forever only 9 days after we met. You better have meant it, Jerry.
Aw.
It's really sweet. I have one from Barry to Jerry. This is sent from a trip that he did to visit his mom. My beloved Jerry, I cried for the very first time today out of loneliness for you. How I wish you could be with me tonight to make me cuddle with you. Yours forever, Barry. And even after 5 years of being together, they had that same romantic and passionate feelings towards each other. This is one from 5 years after they met, Jerry to Barry. I should say also, it seems to imply that he gave a gift along with the note. Dearest Barry, I saw these blossoms in the rain on the way home from work tonight and thought of you. And the nicest thought that spring blossoms eternal in the hearts of lovers and brought them home for you. So that's really sweet.
That is really sweet.
So these are from the 70s and 80s. And you can follow my two gay uncles on Instagram. There's a lot more interesting stuff there between Jerry and Barry and kind of the reflections that their relative who runs the account has of their lives. So that's something that I wanted to share. So Jade, you have others that you want to talk about.
I do have others. This one, I feel like we're obligated to talk about it because of anthropology. but these are Margaret Mead's love letters to Ruth Benedict, two very towering figures in early cultural anthropology, both trained under Franz Boas. I I just have to say, nobody like throughout like my like six my 6 years, my 5 years, however many years of like doing anthropology in undergrad, nobody told me that Margaret Mead and Ruth Benedict were lovers. I just did not. This was not a fact that was privy to me. Mm-hmm. So I'm very delightfully surprised. And these also are, I don't think they were published. Actually, no, they were published. They were posthumously gathered in another book called To Cherish the Life of the World. And it has, it's just selected letters penned by Margaret Mead. We don't have the letters in full, but we do have a few segments, and they're also very beautiful. I just think anthropologists are good love letter writers too. It starts with Ruth Dearheart, which is a great way to start any letter. The mail which I got just before leaving Honolulu and in my steamer mail could not have been better chosen. 5 letters from you, and oh, I hope you may often feel me near you as you did, resting so softly and sweetly in your arms. Whenever I am weary and sick with longing for you, I can just go back and recapture that afternoon out at Bedford Hills this spring when your kisses were rained down on my face. And that memory ends always in peace, beloved. And this is a few days later. Another letter. They really wrote a lot.
They wrote a lot.
I feel like I don't even text my friends every day. I feel ashamed.
They are anthropologists.
They are anthropologists. That is true. In one way, this solitary existence is particularly revealing in the way I can twist and change in my attitude, in my attitudes towards people with absolutely no stimulus at all, such as springs from within me. I'll awaken some morning just loving you frightfully much in some quite new way, and I may not have sufficiently rubbed the sleep from my eyes to even have looked at your picture. It gives me a strange, almost uncanny feeling of autonomy. And it is true that we have this loveliness near together, for I never feel you too far away to whisper to, and your dear hair is always just slipping through my fingers. When I do good work, it is always, always for you. And the thought of you now makes me a little unbearably happy. I'll be so blinded by looking at you, I think now it won't matter. But the lovely thing about our love is that it will. We aren't like those lovers of Edwards, now they are sleeping cheek to cheek, etc., who forgot all the things their love had taught them to love. Precious, precious, I kiss your hair. I feel immensely freed and sustained, the dark months of doubt washed away, and that I can look at you gladly in the eyes as you take me in your arms. My beloved, my beautiful one, I thank God you do not try to fence me off, but trust me to take life as it comes and make something of it. With that trust of yours, I can do anything and come out with something precious saved. Sweet, I kiss your hands. And then this one is like quite, these are all quite passionate. I feel like the last one is from 6 years after they met. Ruth, dearest, I am very happy an enormous number of cobwebs seem to have been blown away in Paris. I was so miserable that last day. I came nearer doubting than ever before the essentially impregnable character of our affection and for each other. And now I feel at peace with the whole world. You may think it is tempting the gods to say so, but I take all of this as high guarantee of what I've always temperamentally doubted, the permanence of passion. And the mere turn of your head, a chance inflection of your voice, have just as much power to make the day over now as they did 4 years ago. And so just as you give me zest for growing older rather than dread, so also you give me a faith I never thought to win in the lastingness of passion. I love you, Ruth. Isn't that sweet?
I just can't believe that Margaret Mead was like, everything that I do for the discipline of anthropology, I actually for do Ruth for Benedict. Ruth Benedict, not for the, for oh the my discipline God, not of anthropology. For
advancing science or humankind, but for one woman.
For one woman, which is kind of incredible, because as we know, like, you know, early cultural anthropology, often the intentions a little bit, but now we have confirmation that it wasn't for reasons of colonization, nor imperialism.
It wasn't for the state. It wasn't for the institution.
It wasn't just any for, of that.
It's for my honey. It's for my honey Ruth.
It's for my girlfriend.
It's for my girlfriend.
I love that. Wow.
Yeah. I feel like that single-handedly like redeemed Anthropology.
I mean, no wonder they didn't tell you that these two were lovers. How disillusioned would it be if they like taught in class? Like, so these contributions that Margaret Mead made to cultural anthropology, which also heavily influenced second wave feminism, were done so for her girlfriend in an anthropology class. Yeah.
That reminds me of, that is very nice. That reminds me of another, oh my God, can we talk about this during Pride? Because it's a straight love story. but basically, I don't remember the details. I just remember it in passing, but it's a pair of lovers. The man was a doctor and the woman was a nurse. And he basically ended up like inventing like a type of gloves you can use in a hospital because he was noticing that her hands were getting like too dried up mm-hmm. from like her work at the hospital. So I think the best inventions always come out of love. Very bad energy.
Thank you, Margaret Mead.
I feel like it would be really funny if I like, if there was like an ethics of anthropology class where like one lecturer is just like, actually, like if you ever do anthropology, it's like it has to be for your lover. Like it's not for like, you know, like your informants, it's not for your collaborators, it's not for advocacy, it's for your girlfriend. That's the spirit of anthropology. That's the hidden sixth tenet of cultural anthropology. Do it for your girlfriend.
Do it for her.
Do it for her. Her being Ruth Benedict.
Ruth Benedict. Of course. We all love Ruth Benedict. We're all in a relationship with Ruth Benedict.
That's what cultural anthropology means. Maybe the real culture was the Ruth Benedict that we found in the way.
let's move on to other
yeah. Let's move on.
Declarations of longing.
When I was doing research for this show, I realized that most of the love letters, the queer love letters that I know are English language ones, with the exception of Rambo, which is in French. So I don't know if you've encountered any non-English language queer love letters. I feel like there's a little bit of a dearth of them, at least in popular memory.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we could potentially count what were they called? Like poems of the Chu Kingdom that yes. we read a few.
Dragon Boat Guy.
Yeah, Dragon Boat Guy. We can, those are kind of like love letters when you think about them, if they're maybe not, maybe he didn't want the Emperor of the Chu Kingdom to like read them first. He wanted to publish them, but they come from a place of deep passion. I did find one that I found really interesting. This is again from an Instagram account, because as we know, Instagram has taken over the discipline of librarianship and archives and history. This is from an account called Queer Love in History, and it's between Nobuko Yoshiya, who was a Japanese writer and pioneer in Japanese lesbian literature, and her girlfriend, Chiyo Monma, who was a math teacher for an all-girls school in Tokyo. So I think this is interesting because Yoshiya, her writing really influenced what we know today to be Yuri manga, or girls mm-hmm. love manga. And if you listen to the show last week, you kind of know what girls love genre media is. It's romantic genre fiction depicting love between women. But she wrote about the intense bonds that girls can form with each other, which would end up influencing some of the earliest girls' love stories called Class S stories. Nobuko Yoshiya and Chiyo Monma met in January of 1923 through mutual friends, and they fell in love really quickly. In 1925, Monma wrote a letter to Yoshiya expressing her frustrations that they could not marry like a heterosexual couple. And in response, Yoshiya wrote to her, "After reading your letter, I resolved to build a small house for the two of us. I will then adopt you as my daughter so that you can become a legal member of my household, adoption being a formality since the law will not recognize you as my wife. And in the meantime, I aim to get the law reformed. We will celebrate your adoption with a party like a typical wedding reception, and it will be our wedding ceremony. It will be really grand. I wonder what kind of kimono would look best on you." That ended up happening. Yoshiya adopted Monma to be legally recognized as family so that they could make financial and medical decisions together. In many places around the world, this is still kind of the way that same-sex couples.
I know in China this was just made available to same-sex couples like a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And it was seen as like a step in the right direction. Which is cute, I guess.
Great.
2021, you can adopt legally your partner. Progress. Which the one thing I love about this letter is how practical it is. She's like really like laying out the steps. All these other ones like are just like, oh, I love you. I want to kiss your hair. Like, you make me so happy. I live for you. And she's like, so here's what we're going to do.
It's really great. It's classic pragmatic lesbian behavior. In 1962, Yoshiya ended up building a house in Kamakura. And that's where the two lived until Yoshiya's death. And today the house is known as the Yoshiya Nobuko Memorial Museum. And as far as I know, it is very difficult to visit it, because it's opened like only once or twice a year.
I love that for her.
So that's Yoshiya Nobuko and Monma Chiyo. And you can find more great stories like theirs on the Instagram account called Queer Love in History. That's my contribution for this segment of the show.
Great. Thank you. Here's another that I found that's one of the few non-English love letters that I really, really love. This is the correspondences between the Finnish writer and artist Tuva Janssen and her life partner Tuliki Pietila, who is also known as Tuti. And Tova, if you don't know, she was the creator of the iconic Finnish Moomin series, and also a painter, I believe. And her partner, Tuti, I believe, is a sculptor and artist. "Beloved, I miss you so dreadfully. Not in a desperate or melancholy way, because I know we shall soon be with each other again, but I feel at such a loss and just can't get it into my head that you're not around anymore. This morning, half awake, I put a hand out to feel for you, then remembered you weren't there. So I got up very quickly to escape the emptiness and worked all day. Wherever I go on the island, you're with me as my security and stimulation. Your happiness and vitality are still there everywhere. And if I left here, you would go with me. You see, I love you as if bewitched, yet at the same time with profound calm. And I'm not afraid of anything life has in store for us." And in another letter, "I'm so unused to being happy that I haven't really come to terms with what it involves. Suddenly, my arms are heaped full of new opportunities, new harmony, new expectations. I feel like a garden that has been watered, so my flowers can bloom. Summer is moving on through its stages, and sometimes I feel so melancholy that you're not here. but perhaps it's good to have a bit of distance between us. I know now that I couldn't possibly be more attached to you in a harmonious and happy way that can only grow stronger and more tender, but I've known that all along. And this is a week later, a really beautiful, almost marital-like letter. Beloved, now my adored relations have finally gone to sleep, strewn about in the most unlikely sleeping places. The chatter has died down, the storm too, and I can talk to you. Thank you for your letter, which felt like a happy hug. Oh yes, my Tuliki, you have never given me anything but warmth, love, and good cheer. Isn't it remarkable and seriously wonderful that there's still not a single shadow between us? And you know what? The best thing of all is that I'm not afraid of the shadows. When they come, as I suppose they must, for all those who care for one another, I think we can maneuver them our own way. I miss those quiet June days when you were piercing together your mosaic or whittling away at some knotty bit of wood, and it was possible to listen, contemplate, and explore how we felt. Tuliki, I long to read more in the book of you. Oh, that's so sweet. I love that. I long for you in every way, and I'm more alone with all these people around me than when I was wandering about on my own thinking of you. Isn't that so nice? She does end the letter also with a drawing of Tutiki, which was the character in the Moomin series that was modeled after her lover Tuti. It's a cute drawing.
Freaking artists. Artist and their emotions. God, get out of here. That was great. I love that.
That was really nice.
That was really nice.
Good for her. I think they had a pretty nice life. I think they just like lived like on an island in Finland. Just like had a very like, they were like the OG cottagecore lesbians, I feel.
Yeah. Certainly sounds like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All these kids can never.
But did they build that house? Did they build that, that house?
They might have built that house. Who knows?
Who knows?
Actually, probably somebody knows.
We've been reading so many wonderful romantic letters, and I think it's really nice to have these to reflect on these days, because it can show us like the ways in which romantic relationships between queer people have existed, and that it's existed throughout history.
Yeah.
And such beautiful words. We're really lucky to be able to read them now. They're more resonant than "Hey baby girl, you up," you know. And it's great. We are hitting the top of the hour of the show today. I want to wrap up the show today with some writing from a person named Constance Gray Swartz. So Gray Swartz was a woman who lived in BC in the 19th century. She was a middle class woman and had many a lover during her time. I learned about her story for the same research project that I talked about closer to the beginning of the show. I took part in a tour of Vancouver queer history led by Glenn DeCatch of Forbidden Vancouver Walking Tours, and he introduced a lot of stories about folks who lived in Vancouver or around Vancouver. The stories of our own drag queen activist pioneers from the 60s, the history of Vancouver Pride, and other things. And he also shared the story of Grace Swartz. So many of her possessions were donated to the Royal BC Museum in Victoria after her death, which is why historian Cameron Deuter could write a paper about her to sort of complicate the multiple discourses of bisexuality that were taking place in the 20th century. So I'll be reading some of Grace Swartz's writing from Deuter's paper. There isn't anything that we can't air on the radio in these fragments, but please do remember that she's writing in the 19th century when Women had to act with civil respectability, and some of her writing could at the time be interpreted basically as not safe for workplace material. Whereas we spent most of the hour reading stuff that was really romantic, some of this stuff from Greer Swartz is quite spicy. So she had a very strong relationship to a friend who she affectionately, for whatever reason, referred to as Insect. And this was during her youth. So she writes, "Darling Insect, I get quite lump in Frody when I think of her. Oh, imagine when we meet again." She also has a relationship to somebody named Molly, who wrote a letter to her when she announced her engagement to her husband. So Molly writes to her, "I do so rejoice over your happiness, Goily mine. And although all the bottom of the universe has dropped out for me, Conti, how can I let him have you? I'm trying hard to be brave and not too selfish, and to be just glad for your sake. Only I'm filled with misgivings too, because although your Felix sounds just too sweet, I don't see how he can possibly be good enough for you. You are sure, aren't you, best beloved, that you do really love him better in all the world, and not just because he's nice and one of us, and most of the other people around you aren't? Conti, darling, darling, how I want you. You're Molly." Wow. Intense. Love that for her. Constance Gray Swartz was like a really avid journaler. And in the 1930s, after she had married her husband, who she nicknamed Felix, in her correspondence to her friends, she wrote of a trip down to the theater, and she watched a film called Inspiration. She wrote in March 1931 that she went to see the one and only Garbo in Inspiration with Bob Montgomery, Lewis Stone, Marjorie R. "She is too lovely, too defined. I wept pitifully, couldn't bear it. Her acting is too wonderful." Goily saw it a week ago and commented that RM, probably an actor, undoubtedly has sex appeal, but a weak face. He certainly has, and oh, how he has it. But Greta's voice, what a woman, 100% more lovely than Marlena. I'd say Marlena is physical appeal. Greta is more mental appeal. Anyway, she's perfect. I just love
how like people have been fangirling throughout history this entire time.
This is a Twitter post.
Yeah, it literally is.
This is a Twitter thirst post. It's so good.
I think she would be a reply guy to Greta Garbo, which I'm guessing is who this is referring to.
Yeah, I assume so also. She probably runs a Stan account for Greta Garbo.
Yeah.
And is a secret fan club member of whoever RM is. Probably not that guy from BTS, so I don't know. Maybe he like time traveled.
It's very possible.
It's very possible. But yeah, I felt like that was a good way to kind of round off our show today. Talking about love letters, talking about queer love, queerness in history, and ending off with some spicy writings from a person who at one point lived in our area code. Do you have any?
What is our area code?
What is our area code? 604, right? 778?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have the same area code?
I think we do, the two of us.
Okay, yeah. Two of us. Mm-hmm. It's like a city thing or province thing? City?
I feel like it's
metropolitan a area. Thing. No, because in Victoria, they have a different area code.
Oh.
It's like 6615 or something like that.
Oh, probably metropolitan thing then.
Yeah. Anyways.
Do you have final thoughts for this episode, Jade?
God, what do I have to say? Maybe I should start writing love letters.
Who will you write them to?
That's a really good question. I think I'll have to start writing like fictional love letters. Maybe I'll write them to the members of BTS. Who knows? RM with his with definite sex appeal with a weak face.
Oh my God. I feel like most Twitter stans should take that up. Log off of Twitter. Just write love letters. Yeah.
Throw away your man, RM. Let's go to the Hamptons.
You know,
have a drink under the stars.
I wonder if celebrities and idols and whatnot, if they still receive fan letters, like actual like written handwritten ones. Probably not as much anymore, but that is to say, can RM even read your handwriting, Jade?
Oh God, my handwriting is so bad. I mean, I guess the question is, am I going to be writing it in English or Korean?
He speaks English, I think.
Does he speak English?
I think he's the one member who like speaks fluent English.
Great. So English then?
Yeah,
I
think so.
Maybe I'll like try to write in like bubble letters. Do you think that will be more legible?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Or maybe, I don't know, maybe I should just like practice some cursive. Practice my calligraphy just for RM and his weak face.
When
I think they'll be into it.
When the art of calligraphy is being progressed, not for calligraphy, but for the sake of RM.
Yeah.
Just as Margaret Mead for the discipline of anthropology. Wow, you're contributing so much to art. Thank you. Okay, let's end the show today. Thank you for tuning into our Pride special episode of Typically Tuesdays. Thank you again to Petal for sending your submission. We hope that you and your loved one have a very good Pride and have a very good wishing you well days for your relationship.
And many prides to come.
And many more. Yeah. The rest of CJSF's programming this week, we are doing a Pride recap special programming initiative. So tune into things like Speak Up, including Femme Conquest, which happens every Friday, playing great music, female musicians. And they will also be doing a Pride recap this week. And they'll be playing at least 100 times more music than we have played today.
Which is not saying much.
My name is Leslie.
And I'm Jade.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Bird Note. For most albatross species, raising a chick is a real challenge. Waved albatrosses produce such slow-growing, needy offspring that females lay only a single egg every 2 years, and both parents need to share the load until youngsters can hunt on their own. Albatrosses tend to pair for life, and it can take a while to find the right partner. So some species don't start breeding until they're 10 years old, with some individuals even waiting till they're 20. Reunited pairs go through an elaborate, synchronized ritual of braying, wing spreading, and bill tapping to reaffirm their bonds before getting down to the business of breeding. In Hawaii, biologists were puzzled to find that some Laysan albatross pairs had not one, but two eggs. Then they found that some of the birds going so faithfully through the ritualized series of courtship displays were both female. Although the eggs were fertilized by males that had since died or were from other pairs, the females were bonded to each other. Many of these female couples remain together for years. They can't successfully raise both offspring, but their combined efforts are necessary to raise one chick. For Bird Note, I'm Wen Fei Tong.